every year we do some stuff a little differently. We keep trying to. Actually, I thought this year the kids were very involved.
You know. It was the adults.
The kids of what age?
Nine is the youngest, and then up to senior high school.
And you had trouble with the adults?
Yeah, the adults.
So hard to herd those cats is what I find. Yeah.
The kids were actually, you know, they wanted to read, they wanted to talk, the adults were out of control.
Really?
Sorry, did you?
We had to scold my adult daughter.
Oh, you know, the interesting thing is, and part of it is your fault, so you should... And maybe this has happened to all of us. As we've grown and learned, we've outpaced those around us in their interest to do so.
Yes.
The interest. Not capacity, not, interest.
Yeah, okay, right, for sure. Capacity.
You know, that we're sitting here going, sponge, sponge, sponge.
Right.
And they're like...
Right.
I mean, so it's who they are, and it's not...
Right.
I hate to be smart.
Right. I have a thought about that. Did you get anything out of the Seder? Did you? There was something special for you?
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
Good.
But it's not a Seder question. It's about counting the Omer.
Mm-hmm.
So
why?
I don't know what's it. It's either my memory just betrays me, or but why is it called counting the Sefirah?
Sefirah, it means counting.
Oh, counting.
Yeah, it means counting. So people say count Sfira, but that's...
But it's double.
But they're really... Yeah, that's double language. Okay. Really, it's Sfira to Omer.
Counting.
So it's the Sfira to Omer, the counting of the Omer. Okay. That's how you say it in Hebrew. But in English,
thank
people
you.
Often say count Sfira.
I thought Sfira is a book.
Yeah.
So it's a different spelling, I guess, right?
Oh, Sefer. You think it's
Sefer is book.
Book.
Okay. Sfira is counting. Okay. Let me just remind you of the Hebraic text.
I have a picture.
Wait. I'll just remind you of this concept here that we've done before of hubs and spokes, right? So if we have the hub of this root, Samech Pei Resh, then we can have different spokes that come out, and it's different manifestations of this root, right? So one of them would be Sefer. Not to turn the background, sorry. Sefer, book. Okay, Sefer. Uh-huh. And one would be Sfira, counting.
Uh-huh.
One would be Mispar, is also that same root, is number. One would be Misparayim, scissors.
Hmm.
Okay, so and what's another one? Let's see, I'm sure there's another one. I can't think of one right. There is for sure another one that's just stopping it. It's not in my head at the second.
No,
all of these are about delineation.
Mm-hmm.
Even Misparayim, they create an edge. You create an edge. So a Sefer is the stories in that book. Oh, Sipur, that's the other one I was thinking of, is a story. Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim, right? And Lisaper is to tell a story. So it's all the same root as this.
Ah, interesting.
Okay? All of that. Think about a story. A story is also delineating because lots of things happened at your Seder.
Mm-hmm.
You had to set the table. You had to clear the table. You had to, somebody spilled. You didn't tell me that part. That's not... right.
We could tell you that part.
No, I'm saying you didn't because that's not the story I asked for.
Right.
I asked for a piece of the Seder. And so you picked a piece. You cut,
cut
details and picked... Mm-hmm. The piece. That's a story. That's what a story is. Because lots of things happen in your life. You know, you're flying from here to wherever. But there's a story. Mm-hmm. The story of going through TSA, or the story of running for the plane, or the story of the what you ate on the plane, or the story of the person you spoke to. Like, there's lots of stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
There. So you cut them. Mm-hmm. So, or you have a beginning, middle, and end. It's delineated. Mm-hmm. So all of the mispar also is that number, right? So that's why it's called Sfira, and Sefer is the same word, but same root, but it's a different thing. Sefer also, you're not telling the whole thing, it's just what's inside that book.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so.
So, and that was, Elliot got this handout from school, this helpful things about Passover, and when to light candles, and then at the end, I was remember counting Sefer.
Right.
And where is the word Omer? Why is this counting in the sifir? So
right.
That kind of confused me.
Yeah, okay, so sifira, sfira is counting. Sfira shel ha-Omer, the counting of the Omer, which we make into what's called smichut. We conjugate it into, I guess it's not the word conjugate. That's the right word. Anyway, you bring it together. Smichut, you bring it together. Sfirat ha-Omer is how you do sfira shel ha-Omer. So we do that a lot, with lots of different things. Let's, what could I think of?
Another one?
Shali.
Sabi Shali.
No, but that's different than putting the two words together.
Okay.
Like bait shall, right, shall Knesset. Bait shall, this is a harder one, because bait Knesset.
Knesset,
it is smichut, but it's harder to see. It's when you have a taf, it's when you have a hay at the end that you can easily see it. So let's say, what has a hay at the end? A lot of people try to do this with su'udat shlishit, which is incorrect. They do su'udat shlishit. That's incorrect. Because it's not su'udat shel. It always has to be a shell. It's not su'udat shel shlishit. It's the third meal. So it's su'udat shlishit. People make that mistake. It drives me nuts.
Kosher shel Pesach, right?
What? Kosher le Pesach. Yeah. Sometimes people do say kosher shel Pesach. They do. But that's not the smichut. Here we have in that book, Halichot Bat Yisrael. It's the Halichot Bat Yisrael is saying Halachot Shel Benot Yisrael, or Shel Bat Yisrael. Halachot.
So the yellow one.
Hilchot.
The yellow.
Right.
Two.
That's also Smichot. Halichot. That one. That's Smichot in the title. Halichot. It really should be the Halachas of the Daughter of Israel. Halachot Shel Bat Yisrael. But here it's Halichot Bat Yisrael, the halachas of, right? So that's smichot. So Sfirat Omer is the counting of the Omer. That's a nice book, by the way, in case you ever wanted to look through. It's a nice set to have. It's on the stringent side, but nevertheless, it's helpful just to look through all kinds of things that apply to women, and some of the reasons, and then some of the sources you can look up. Okay, and what about you?
Well, one thing I had heard. The Jews went down 49 levels before they were redeemed, and actually counting, when you count the Omer, you're counting up 49.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're basically
that's good.
Right. I wanted to hear about your Seder. Tell me something from Seder, and then I'll go with that. I'll continue with that.
Two things we've gone to four Seder, and what I find sort of disappointing is no one really tries to enhance the Seder or make it something very extraordinary.
It's just the same old, same old.
It's the same thing.
Read the book.
One of the rabbis, for this time in California, tried to do something, but it didn't go over because it was taking forever. He was trying to entertain us.
Now, how many people? Were there for the week?
I think for the Sederim, there must have been 200 to 300, because we were in different halls.
Oh, okay.
But how many were at your Seder?
In our room, I'll guess, I don't know, 150, 200.
So they, for one Seder.
We had our own table.
So
we had our own table,
somewhere?
My family.
So the retreat?
Yeah.
Is it a hotel?
No, this is this woman, Jeannie Litvin, and her husband. They both go by their own names. His name is Mel Teitelbaum. He's a lawyer. He does have the title of rabbi, so I guess he has whatever. They've done this now in this hotel, the Hyatt Regency in Valencia, which is not very far from Los Angeles. It's in San Clarita Township, or whatever it's called. They've done this now for, I think this must have been their eighth year in that particular hotel. And she's done it in Florida and Miami.
And just the whole week of Passover?
Yeah, just
takes the whole hotel.
As the Hazan that they had there commented, he doesn't really go to too many of these you know, basics in a hotel, whatever. He said this one was very well organized, and it was. You had a schedule for every day, hour by hour, whatever, mm-hmm.
Programming and all that
day.
Stuff.
And it followed that to a T.
Wow.
There was.
And how many people were there for the whole week, more or less?
Again, I don't really know, but it seemed like we were only in one room this time, maybe a larger, mm-hmm. larger room. No, that's my disappointment. They don't really engage. Well, they don't make it something extraordinary. They don't add to it any iota. It's just they read from the Haggadah, and there isn't.
See, and we, on the other hand, are constantly
when you're sitting
trying.
At your own table, mm-hmm. everyone can ask something. And,
right.
I mean, it's almost better to be at home.
Mm-hmm. We did like
and then
Star
I don't
Wars
feel I really don't feel like I had a Pesach.
Huh. That's which is sort of
I mean it's nice that you don't have all that work
cooking.
On the other hand, you didn't have all the work
for days, whatever, and which would be hard. But you don't have that feeling.
I don't have it.
Mm-hmm. They feed you.
Right. Feed you, right.
Yeah. And every night they had a tea from 10 to 12. We never went. It's mainly 10
to 12 at night? After my bedtime?
I don't know what they serve, from what I understand.
Probably desserts.
And salads or whatever.
Oh, really?
Wow. It's mainly for socializing. Mm-hmm. But by then I was...
Like I said, bedtime. Who wants to eat that light anyway?
Well, that's just it. I mean, you're so full.
It's like a
you can't
cruise.
Even,
yeah,
you
it is like
lunch,
a cruise.
Especially
yeah.
on the Yontif days when you go from lunch to
right.
dinner, there's not enough hours.
Not until you have all the meals.
Or you're not hungry. You're just not hungry.
Yeah. And how about you?
Wait, you had a thought?
Well,
and
just a question. So if you leave your house for Passover, what do you do with this stuff? Do you still, you have to
you
clean still?
You,
no?
still? Well, you don't have to, well, if you're leaving for the entire Passover,
right.
you could just lock the door and sell your chametz.
Right, okay. You have to sell,
that's all you,
have you
to
don't
do.
Have to clean.
Okay.
Without
you
getting
clean
rid
anything.
Of it or just
no, you don't have to get rid of
anything.
No, if you're never there.
You don't have to change over, you're not going
to. You don't have to do it. You don't have to change anything because you're not using the kitchen. That's only for using
right.
the kitchen.
Right,
but
right.
if you're actually leaving for that, which is why people leave for the whole time.
Right.
If you're leaving just for the seder, so you
that
save the cooking for the seder, but you still have to then worry about your house, right? So this way you just sell, mm-hmm. and you're done. Some people would want to put it all together into one location. Some people would want to like still do a little bit of the going through to let go of stuff. But you don't have
to.
Come
home tomorrow and flip her kitchen back.
Right, yeah. Flipping the kitchen is a big deal.
Leslie, because she went to Nashville for Chol HaMoed in the second.
Oh.
So tomorrow she'll come home and have to flip her kitchen. At least we're done with that.
Right, we always have the pizza, the traditional Motzei Yontif pizza for after everything gets put away. So, yes, that's our.
We have hamburgers.
Uh-huh. We have hamburgers, that's cute.
Big buns.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So I'll tell you two different things. So I learned one thing that I really appreciated about stealing the afikoman. Because that's always bothered me very much.
The concept of it?
Yeah, stealing it. Really bothered me. The kids fight about it. They leave the table to go look for it. They're not at the table anyway. Like, it really bothered me the whole time.
The opposite tradition.
Of what?
You have the kids hide it. And we have to redeem it, and then they have to go.
But they still leave the table.
They still leave the
and
table.
Argue about it.
They didn't argue. They
three
didn't
times.
Argue. But the kids hide it, and then we redeem it.
Yeah. Well,
that's
it's supposed to be. Yeah, the kids. Well,
the kids steal it.
The
then
kids
they
steal
redeem
it, and then
they
redeem
it.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah,
we
have
to hide it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they can hide. Well, yeah. So Ephraim usually. I mean, we do. There's a Sephardic custom that after you break the yachatz, and that the big one is afikoman, and you put it in a bag, and he puts it on his back, and he walks around the table. And we ask him, where is he coming from? He says, from the land of Mitzrayim. Where are you going? To Eretz Yisrael. So he walks around the table and says that. But then he usually walks through the kitchen and comes back without it and sits down. So it's somewhere. And then you know
so
somebody
he hid it.
Yeah. So he hides it, but then somebody goes and finds it and hides it again.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so he hides it easy.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then
well, our kids aren't that clever yet, so they don't really hide
it. And then they have to find it again. Yeah, and then they redeem it. Anyway, so that worked out nicely because now everybody's like nice enough and old enough to, you know, find it nicely and not leave the table and squabble about it. But anyway, over the years it bothered me. But what I learned this year was such a nice thing. First of all, it turns out it bothers, I think, Rav Sternbach also, or Varbach. Anyway, some big person. So he does not call it stealing the afikoman. He just called it taking the afikoman. And he says, what is it? You break that yachatz, and then The yachatz, that broken matzah, it's the bigger half that goes for the afikomen. And the afikomen and the seder signs is called safun, called hidden. Like when you get to that part of the seder is when you eat the afikomen, the hidden. So, and the seder is divided into two parts, or one way to divide the seder is before the meal and after the meal. All the before the meal is language of the past and the redemption of the past. All the after the meal, including the halal and everything, is all about the future and the future redemption, right? So what you're doing is you're breaking that in the past part of the seder, and you're hiding it for the future. Mm. And who's taking it?
The children.
But the children. The because the future is in their hands.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's sort of nice.
I think that's really nice, that, right?
That's
so
nice.
It depends on them. It's nice and scary depending on how your children behave, you know, as they grow up. But,
right.
But anyway, that's the idea, is that the future is hidden. And it's hidden in their hands, and we do have to entrust it to them. And that's what the Seder is about,
wow,
is
like
putting
that.
The Seder
wow.
into their hands, putting Judaism into the hands of the children, because they are the ones who bring it to the future. And so the whole thing is about understanding that we are transferring over what we have into the hands of those who carry it into the future. So I like that a lot. Okay, so now with that then, I'm also in the place where I learn a lot more than everybody wants to hear at the Seder. So we're talking about how do we make our Seder more interesting, blah, 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 blah. It's every year's conversation. Should we chuck the Haggadah? Should we tell stories? Should we figure out songs? Should we make a play? You know, every single year. And every single year we read the Seder and we read the Haggadah again. After we've discussed it, right? After we've discussed what should we do, right? Part of it's we didn't do it with enough time. People aren't creative enough. People don't want to take the time. And part of it is because the Haggadah is traditional and everybody does expect that. And there is something that you get out of reading that mm-hmm. thing,
right?
Right. So, but as we were discussing it, so somebody said, well, how about if we let Yehoshua lead it? And everybody said, no.
That's not going to happen.
They said, how about if we, and Ephraim, because at first I thought Ephraim's not going to want to give it up. And he said, I'll give it up. He said, it's hurting cats. Are you kidding? I'll be happy to give it up. It's so difficult getting everybody to focus on this. I got it. Right?
I thought it was just us.
Right. That's why I'm telling this story. So then we thought, oh, what if we have like a mother-led Seder? It could be Safta and Ima and the girls, right? It could be all the mothers leading the Seder. And I thought, I don't want to do that. Like, I'm definitely not interested. But why? Not just because of the herding cats aspect, but because I have a parallel universe that I live in.
Right.
And I would have to give it up to be able to lead the Seder. Right? I'd have to be in this universe instead of in that universe. Did I tell you this about Donnie? Yeah, so that's what I want. And I realized that is the way I manage the Seder, is I have a parallel universe. And
so you just kind of... Like,
it works out very well for me that I have my own tape playing. I can access my own Divrei Torah. So while somebody breaks that matzah and puts it in a bag, nobody has to say, this is for the children, it's going to the future, it's going to be hidden, and it's all about... But I know that. And I can think that at that time. And I don't have to announce it. It's in my parallel universe. And I've done enough learning that I have this parallel universe that I can live in both at the same time. Not so easy if I was leading it, which is why I chose not to lead. But I get to hear my Divrei Torah because I prepared. And I did. And I listened to Rabbi Rosner's classes, but I did bring one of his PDF files to the table for me next to my Haggadah. And I just flipped through as I was going through just to remind me of a few different things, like just to give me prompts for my parallel universe. I found that helpful. And I do suggest it as a way.
Well,
we can't always get everybody else interested in what we're interested in.
It is true. When we're leading it, we have to be sort of in charge.
Right, so the leading, you do have to be in charge. And it is a little harder to live in your parallel universe.
You know, I don't think we're going to find anybody else to lead it.
But it could be that if the two of you are leading it in the future, that you could have
assign
you could have parallel universe signs that you give to each other. Really?
Yeah. Okay.
You know, that where you could just say, oh, remember the thing about the afikomen here? Yeah. And so now we blah, 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 blah. You keep leading. But you just like do like little things to trigger parallel universe memories. And it doesn't have to be explained to everybody. Because that's, you know, we have this phrase in Hebrew, Hameivin Yavin. The one who understands will understand. So we use that often if we're trying to say something. The reason when we would say that out loud is if we're trying to tell somebody something without saying it in a way that somebody else will understand it, because we don't want them to understand it.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
So, right.
Speaking in Yiddish.
Right.
In front of your
speaking in Yiddish.
Don't understand
or speaking in English with more difficult words. Or just saying, you know, let's say somebody would, let's say a kid would say, oh, I want to read this book. It's all about colors, 50 Shades of Grey.
You
and
go.
You say, I don't think so, and you grab it out of their hand, right, and put it away, and somebody looks at you because they don't know what that book is, and they think, why shouldn't they read about colors? They're an art student, right? and you say, it's not about colors, it's about off colors, hameven yaven, right? And you put it away. Like, the one who understands, understands, but it's about off colors, right? Done! You said everything Beck doesn't need to know, right? So that's hameven yaven. So there is hamevin yavin, the one who understands will understand on many different levels. So the same thing with reading the Haggadah. The more we invest in learning the Haggadah, the more it will speak to us. And frankly, it doesn't speak to most people because they don't learn it. So, and it doesn't fully speak to me yet either because I haven't learned enough. But every year I learn a little bit more. So one of the things I learned this year that which I also appreciated is, you know, all these people, they're discussing, sitting around, talking about Yetziyah Mitzrayim until the morning. Who are these people and why are they discussing it? And they don't even live at the same time, right?
So it's an interesting conversation.
Right. But they're Levium. They're Levium and Rabbi Akiva. Did I mention this to you?
No.
Okay. So each one of those rabbis, they're all Levium except for Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so that's who's there. Levim and Rabbi Akiva. And this will lead us into our next, this part.
Where is that
part of the Haggadah.
Okay.
Where they say,
the rabbis, mm-hmm.
these four rabbis are sitting around all night discussing Yetziyah Mitzrayim.
Until Shema.
They are the same rabbis. Yes. They are the rabbis who have written things in Pirkei Avot. Correct, yes. But the Pirkei Avot is also, the Mishnah is written over 200 years. So they didn't all live at the same time. Right, so... So this conversation is happening. So the question is, what's up with that conversation? Here's just like a piece where you can just say, oh, it's a conversation. They didn't understand it, and so now they understand it. What does that mean? Nothing. Right? Really. And you can just skip it. Or you say, okay, they're Levium and Rabbi Akiva. They're all discussing coming out of Egypt. We're all supposed to figure out how to feel like we came out of Egypt. They didn't come out. They were never enslaved because they were Levium.
And the Levium, built.
No.
Oh,
no, right. The Levium were not enslaved. No, they weren't descended from people who were enslaved because they're Levium. How are you? It's one thing to say.
So the Levium weren't enslaved? No. I don't think I knew that.
No,
what are they
doing? They're the priestly class. They
no, I know, but where?
They were there.
They were there, but they were enslaved. Just exempt.
Yeah.
Now, how do we know that?
That is our tradition. It was professional courtesy in that sense. Like a doctor will treat somebody else's doctor kid for free, it's professional courtesy. Like a lawyer will write a letter for another lawyer, it's professional courtesy. So the those who were in charge, the Egyptian in charge people, did not enslave our in charge people.
But that was before the golden calf. They were not Levim as we know them.
Correct, but still that, you're right. Good. Good for you. Okay. Correct. But they were, but that tribe was not enslaved. That tribe was not enslaved in them.
So they were priests.
They lived there, but they were not enslaved. They were
so
not enslaved.
I have another question. Somewhere, right, it is said that God is never mentioned during the Savior.
Moses is not mentioned. God is mentioned.
Yeah, Moses is also mentioned
because he goes back and forth to Pharaoh.
No, he's mentioned in one place,
one time.
But no, he's not. He's only mentioned. His name is only once in the Haggadah.
The burning bush, right?
No, that's not in the Haggadah.
It's not.
No. So the story. He's for sure mentioned in this story in Exodus. Right. In the text of the Haggadah, his name is only there once.
Oh.
So because it's not a story about Moshe. You might think.
I was going to say, and it's funny. You might discuss that. I never.
With all the plagues. No, he's not really.
You might think that it's a story about Moshe if you read the text from Exodus, right? Okay. Because he features prominently in being our leader and taking us out. But the text of the Haggadah specifically, almost completely, but it mentions him once. It omits his name because part of it wants to teach us this is not a story about Moshe. This is a story about you. Right? So now, if it is a story about you, the question is, Why are these rabbis who are Levium who weren't enslaved, how are they? They are trying to figure it out too. How will they, these Levium who do not descend from people who were enslaved, how will they make it feel like it's theirs? And Rabbi Akiva, who's descended from converts.
Oh.
Right?
So there, that was
right.
the point.
So, right, so they were not, and the, right, oh, converts, right? So those people are not descended from people who were enslaved. And yet they are still obligated to grapple with this concept to make it feel real for them. They have to figure it out. So that's what's going on, is these rabbis who don't come from people who said, this is what, imagine.
So it's not in their DNA.
It's not in their DNA, right? Imagine somebody who never had Jewish oppression, right? They didn't come from Russia. They didn't come from the Holocaust. They didn't come from, and so they grew up.
I can't even imagine those people.
Right? It's hard to imagine, right? Somebody who, I don't know, their ancestors came from comfortable Europe, 300 years ago, went to Alaska, somehow maintained their tradition, but they were, because they were in Alaska 300 years ago, they were out of
all the
connection,
persecution.
But and out of all the persecution, and even out of the newspaper reach of the Holocaust, and so they didn't hear about it. And they're comfortable in who? How will they relate to that kind of persecution, to
right.
that kind of death? Like, so
well,
hard for them.
That's the problem.
That's happening now.
That's what I was just going to say. That's the problem. That I think that we have now with our young people and kids, they can't relate. They don't understand. There's no ability to put themselves into that spot in any manner, form,
very,
or fashion.
Very difficult, right. So it's very interesting. So I got
spot.
The
spot,
spot of understanding what it is to be a Jew.
To be persecuted, to be Jewish in a place where people don't really want you to be Jewish and in fact think being Jewish is
or
something
to even
is.
Know what being Jewish is.
No, that's
it's amazing.
Next
I mean,
step, yeah.
I got a call. Yeah.
These kids have no direct connection even to the Holocaust.
Well, but intellectually, people of our general.
You either knew of you know of
knew
someone.
Knew of it, know
someone.
Somebody
yeah.
who was there, have heard stories, have read things,
right.
so have seen movies.
Went to Hebrew school, like except for those who couldn't.
But, you know
but you were oppressed.
Well, when I started learning more. The whole attitude is different. You know, here you celebrate, you're happy to be Jewish. It was never like that
right.
in Russia.
It was not something you were the
you celebrated. It was
no,
like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
a burden, you know, but, mm-hmm. you know, it was not a joyous thing, you know.
It was a scary thing.
So
yeah.
It's just a different attitude, uh-huh. you know. I mean, it's wonderful here that, you know, you can be really openly happy and proud and
right. Yes.
But you know, so
but it has
in America,
but it has
happy.
Its people. but they run away.
But right? over there, they're not. You know, in Russia, they're not happy at all. But
right, that's completely different. And I think that a lot of our Judaism has boiled. A lot of our transference of Judaism has boiled down into a default mode of we're oppressed, which is how we know we're different, and that's how we know. And so don't you forget it. And that's why we're building Holocaust museums, and that's why we want to remind people. People died because of this.
However, that doesn't resonate
that doesn't
with
resonate.
Today's youth.
It does not, because what are you
Doug
saying?
You say to Elliot, the yeah. reason you go to DJDS is because I couldn't do that in Russia. You know, that's not going to resonate with him.
Or certainly not with his kids. Mm-hmm. It might with him because he's her. Her
this
direct
first,
version,
the first
right?
one.
But it's very hard to. So over Chol HaMoed, I got a text from somebody in BBYO. Can you please speak for our group? We're having a mother daughter brunch on Sunday, and our speaker fell through. Rabbi Sunshine gave me your name. Maybe you'd be willing. Fine. So I said, fine, I'll do it. Happy to do it. And what subject do you want? And I sent her a whole long list. The Sefirot HaOmer, the Kabbalah, of this Kabbalah 101, like mysticism, Judaism, souls, reincarnation, you know, Olam Haba, whatever topic you want.
That wasn't what they wanted.
I said, and at the end I said, I threw in, like, what it means to be Jewish. She said, that's what, yeah.
That's what they want.
That's what they want. And
well,
I thought
which is good.
Yeah, it is.
They aren't even anywhere close to the other thing. They have no connection with any of those other subjects that you...
She didn't even know I was talking about.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's no...
No, I just forgot to bring it, like,
all
so far...
All the way down.
All the way down.
But you didn't forget. You didn't forget.
I threw that one in, yeah.
You did it.
But that's what they wanted, and they loved it, so I just... they want. And so it was mothers and daughters, and... Yeah. And so, for so many of them, it
could
worked out. It worked out very well. But I'm just saying, like, it was good, and it was kind of sad that mm-hmm. that's what they needed was the most basic. This is what it is to be a Jew.
See, that's why we can never go away for Pesach.
Right. Or for Shabbos.
Our kids,
nothing.
That's what they get.
That's what they need. Yeah. So you are giving valuable stuff to them.
And I should apologize for saying it's your fault.
It's fine. I'll take it.
Well, that was a little bit.
But that is sort of interesting what you said, that when you're gone, you don't feel like you've done it.
I don't know about it.
To a hotel, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, but
if I go to my sister's...
You know, well, but that's different. Yeah. I'm talking about
I participated in a Seder. I mean, I read...
Right. You did the part.
And I had the matzah, whatever.
But it's the whole...
But the physical work makes a difference.
When you don't actively participate in something.
In setting up, yeah, it definitely makes a difference. Because that is the preparation for Pesach, is a physical preparation.
Well, and I think the other thing is, we've talked about it, the whole week is somehow different. Just in terms of the food that you prepare.
You're not preparing anything. If you're not preparing, it tastes the same
the way they prepare it today.
And that's the other thing.
The way they prepare it today, you're not tasting different. They make cakes that are amazing cakes. They make, you know.
Usually,
but see, we
fish 8
really,
days in a row.
Yeah, the gefilte fish is a big deal. I eat the same thing for lunch.
Oh, my gosh. Am I tired? I have one more left.
Oh, so, well.
But, I mean, you know.
Get creative with your
recipes. This hotel was very genius. They made some very nice, different foods.
Things.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't, and that's what you missed. Is that you didn't
do anything.
Right, but I thought about it. Like, you are bringing... I mean, I was thinking about, because Pesach is a Rosh Hashanah. So I was thinking about, as I was throwing away packages and deciding, like, you know, we've had this in the snack... Even though it's not chametz, we've had these almonds in the snack drawer for quite some
time. Which I always
time
do
for them
Pesach
to go,
too.
Right? I feel like this is the end.
I do use Pesach.
The year
for
is closing
thing.
Down. I'm throwing away things we didn't use.
I saw this last
Pesach, and now it's time to throw it away. It didn't get eaten. Throw it away. Right? So you throw away the ends of your crackers and the ends of your nuts and the ends of, like, and you check out your spices and whatever it is. You are closing things up. And even though I closed that part, there were certain things I just closed. Like, I did tape over my actual spice drawer.
Right,
I just taped it. I didn't take out all the spices and wipe it. It's not fully clean. That's the truth. It's not hummy. In there, but it's not clean, right? So I thought, but as I opened things out, I wiped again. I'm like, oh, now I'm starting fresh. Now I'm freshening.
Mess it up again.
Yeah, but now I'm fresh. But like, it's a new start. That was a close to the year, and now the year is starting. Because we do after Pesach, also after Havdalah, we wish people not just a good vach, but a good year. Like, that's a different bracha after the Havdalah of Pesach. You do wish people a good year, right? Good year. So, because you are
the one of the four New Year's?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
that's
really, it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan, but Pesach is the time of it. So there is a new start there. And so even putting some things away, as I put things away, I thought, I had never used this spoon. This is going in the Ark bag. And this bowl's always been in the way, you know, now that I'm rearranging the cabinet. And I don't use it, so that's going in the Ark bag. Like, there's a new start, too. Like, I'm going to rearrange these things so that it works better in this cabinet now that I'm putting it back. Mm-hmm. So it's that new start aspect. Okay, now let's just go for Sirat Omer. Just the one thing about, we did go down to the 49 levels of Tumah. Why, do you have to leave early?
No, just on time.
Okay, fine. You can.
I'm good.
Okay, good. We're going to get to, you're going to see. Right, so we did, in Egypt, we did go down the 49 levels of Tumah. And I'm not going to go deeply into Sirat Omer this time. I have classes online if you want to hear. But we did sink down to the 49th level of Tumah. But what Pesach is about also is skipping over the prerequisites, as we discussed. That's what we passed over, was the prerequisites in order to accomplish the spiritual heights that we needed to accomplish. So really, Pesach skipped us up to the 49th level of Kedusha, and out of the 49th level of Tumah. So Pesach brought us up.
So we skipped 98.
Right.
From minus 49 to a plus 49.
Right.
But that's sort of a little inconsistent with the fact that we are counting the 49 now.
So you're counting both. Right. So there was a whisk up to where we could be. There was that passing over. But
so we didn't just go back to zero.
Which we don't really belong up there.
You don't
we
really
just
belong
didn't go back
really
to zero.
You don't really belong up there. We're not really ready to get the Torah yet. So now we have this incubation period. Remember we talked about the egg, how the egg is born, and then it hatches. It's born by the energy of the mother. It hatches by the energy of the chick. Right? So you could be squeezed out by the external energy, but in order for us to actually hatch, we have to do the work ourselves. Right? So Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. But in order for us to become the people we need to be, to separate from slavery and become God's chosen people, yes, he gives us a gift, but we actually have to do the work. We have to receive the Torah. It's not just flowing on us. We have to open up to take it in, right? So we have this incubation period to give us a separation between Egypt and the Torah. That's what Sefirot HaOmer is. But really what we're doing is during this time, we are counting up the levels to get to Shavuos, number 50. But we're also repairing those levels. So for each one, you're repairing both.
So when you do one, are you repairing 49 to 48?
No, you're doing it this way. Yeah,
you start in the middle and go like this.
Yeah, and so there's a tefillah like that. There's a prayer for that in after Sefirot HaOmer. You'll see in many sitters, it has a special prayer that says, "Please Hashem, accept this counting in place of the Omer offering and help." Help this counting fix whatever damage I have done in the sphera of, and you fill in the blank. Which is different every day, right? So whatever damage I've done, so today is number 9, which is Chesed Gvura Shebegvura today. It's Gvura Shebegvura.
We have our app.
Good for you.
Or three.
Yeah, I'm getting this successfully downloaded an app. Yeah, that's good. Oh, great. Oh, look at that. Nice. What app is that? That's very
this
cool.
This is a really good one. And if you pay for it, it doesn't have an ad, but I don't pay. So it has the text, and you can have it in English or transliteration or Hebrew, and then the blessing, and, you know.
Nice.
And then it also has a quote for the day.
Very nice. Yeah. Wow. Cool. Okay, I'll have to look for an app.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
This one is called, I also have the Chabad one.
Yeah, I have one all in Hebrew also, but it's hard.
Anyway, so Chabad will probably have that tefillah.
I have.
So it's a nice tefillah that you just add in that little piece that you're trying to fix. And you just say, please Hashem, help me fix this. So really that's all that's required is just to have that slightly in mind. And you could even have in mind, I don't know what the heck this is about. This is all Kabbalistic. But I know that today is called Gevura Shebegvura, and I know that means something. So please, God, help me fix what I need to fix, and that's something. That's adequate kavana.
Gevura is strength?
Gevura is strength, right. But that's adequate kavana for the work. If you can learn a little bit more, what does Gevura mean? How is strength in my life? And what about this day of strength within strength? How does that work for me? And how might I manifest that? That would be going much further. And some people will take the time to do that. And there are some books also that just give you little ideas on how to apply that in your life. Yeah, so today
the Chabad one has the Rebbe's.
So this is for every day?
Yeah, every day. And the Rebbe that has something from the Rebbe every day. Which, you know.
Yeah, that can be nice.
It is nice. And actually, yes, the one last night spoke to me because of a conversation with a nephew.
Now, are you a bus lady?
No.
You're not?
No.
So for some reason, I thought your family was
Israel. Israel.
And you're a Eshet Kohen. Are you a Bat Kohen also? You're a bus lady and Eshet Kohen. And what's your family? Is your family?
Israel.
Yeah. Right, so we're going to start out with the mitzvah of the Levim. So you're an Eshet Kohen.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, you are.
Okay, yeah.
That makes a difference. You get to eat truma.
except, what's the question? Because they were divorced.
Yeah. See, that's the problem. So technically, you're not supposed to. If you're not supposed to marry. So I'm a divorced person. But that doesn't change what he is. But
doesn't it does actually change what he is?
Well,
so, I mean, he's a coin, but he's a coin that
sort of a disgraced one.
Yeah, it does change.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because it changes the status,
since,
right? Because do you have kids
we allow,
together?
No.
Since we allow divorce, you would.
You do allow divorce.
I mean, that's it's
fine. Right, right. It's an interesting thing, but right, a Kohen can't marry a divorcee, right? Or a ger. A ger, or anyone else. Or
my father was a Levi, so
your father was.
My father was.
So, yeah, so you're bat.
Yeah.
So you're bat lady.
Right.
You're not a
Yisrael.
Right.
No, I'm not. I'm just bat lady. Right. You made connection. Right. But I don't think he'd be an Ishit Kohen.
No, I don't think so either. No, he was.
Yeah. right. So they can't marry a Kohen. Can't marry a divorcee, a ger, or a woman who was a prostitute, even if she.
I wasn't that.
Right. Right.
Just making just that clear.
Right, right, okay.
A widow.
A widow.
Yes.
Yes.
Can marry a widow. Yes. 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 Except for the Kohen Gadol.
Kills
two after. Only
the Kohen Gadol has to marry a virgin. But the a Kohen can marry some, even if a woman slept around, but only with Jews, she can still marry a Kohen.
Okay.
Anyway, so, but here's something about Levium. So that's what I wanted to mention, because my husband's a Levi. So I do feel that with a little connection with Levium. Part of it is that my kids sing nice, and especially my girls sing beautifully. Yeah. So, and Levium were the singers.
My father had the most gorgeous voice.
So Levium often have beautiful voices because they were the singers in the Beit HaMikdash. And they sang in the choir, and they sang to create an environment of holiness, an environment of inspiration for others. But not only do they sing to create that environment of inspiration, but they teach Torah. That's the job of the Levium, is to teach Torah. So because they teach Torah, that means they have to learn Torah. And because they learn Torah, that means they don't have time to plant and to plow and to harvest and to reap and all that stuff. So we're supposed to do that for them. So the rest of the Jews are supposed to do that. So this is the mitzvah 450, not to neglect the Levium by failing to give them their gifts. Okay, so we are adjured not to forsake the Levites and not to neglect to give them their complete lawful ration. In other words, we should not delay giving them their tithes, and especially so at these pilgrimage festivals, these Shalosh Regalim, when we are adjured about them yet more, so as to make them happy at the festive time. As it was stated, take heed to yourself, lest you forsake the Levites all the days of your land. Now, we talked about before how there's four languages of a prohibition, right? So here we have two of them, take heed and lest, right? So we have hishamer is the take heed. We have hishamer, pen, al, velo. Those four tell you that it's going to be a lo ta'ase, right? So here's a lo ta'ase, don't do this, do not neglect. But it's in two, it's a double negative here, don't neglect to give them. So you have two, so it just shows you it's very strong, this is very strong. So, but what it's mentioning, which is not, I don't think, a positive commandment for the Levium, necessarily, is this concept of you shall be happy on your holiday. So we sing that song, and I'm sure many of you have heard, V'samacha, V'chagecha, V'hayita, Ach Sameach, right? You've all heard that song, right? Really, there's a dot, dot, dot in those lyrics. It's a V'samachta, V'chagecha, dot, 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 V'hayita, Ach Sameach. So really it is, you shall be happy in your holidays. Who? You. Your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, the Levi, the widow, the orphan.
Stranger
in your midst, that's right. Right. Thank you. And then you will be happy in your holiday, right? So the deal is, the Rashi on that says, the first four are yours, and the last four are Hashem's, right? So the first four, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, said, so you're going to take care of them. So take care of, I'll take care of those four, you take care of my four. You make sure that you include the widow, the stranger, the orphan, and the Levite at your table. So why the Levite? If they're the Torah teacher, why are they a Neb that they need to be at your table? Like what taking care of do they need? But what taking care of is that they're not landed. They don't have the security, and neither does a widow. She doesn't have her husband for her security. Like she feels more vulnerable in the world. And an orphan too, no father or no mother. Because when we say orphan, it's just one parent gone. It doesn't mean both necessarily. But if you've lost one and you're not, I don't know how it works for once you're really an adult. I think if you're never married, you're still always an orphan. You know, I think a 50-year-old who lost their parents but never married is an orphan.
So ultimately, somebody who doesn't get married is an orphan.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
That's right. So we need to reach out to them. We need to understand these are people without family, without security, without feeling like they have a place in the community. And I would think today we should say the divorcee also, you know, because that is a person who feels alone. It's hard. And the older single, they feel alone. They don't have their spot. So So Hashem says, reach out to them and include them, especially in the festivals, especially in the holidays when everybody has a place to go. And some people feel like, I don't. You know, what am I going to do? What table will I sit at? You know, how will I make this work? So we're supposed to reach out and make sure that we take care of them. So here it's just talking about the lady. So in this Isur is included that positive thing. It says, especially when we're adjured to make them happy at the festive time. That's a time when for sure you don't want to delay giving them what's necessary for them to make the holiday. You know, and there's a magazine, my daughter reads Mishpacha, and Mishpacha has a column every week called Words Unspoken, where somebody writes a letter, their real letter's written, but thrown out there, you know, a letter written by the older unmarried sibling. And she'll write, I love it when you come for Yantif. I love it when you married siblings come, and all the nieces and nephews, they're so cute. But please don't take me for granted. I've been working with Ima preparing Pesach, so you can come, and now you think I should babysit so that you guys can take naps? Like, really, that's not very nice. Like, I wish I had kids like that. And you want to take advantage of me? Like, think a little bit about my feelings and how I feel over this, right? So they have letters like that. You know, so one of the letters was, Erev Pesach, thank you so much, older sibling who's made money, for giving me some of it to help me make Yantif. Right? I have a family. I don't have enough money. I so appreciate that you give me several hundred dollars every year to help me make Yantif. But could you give it to me, like, 2 weeks before Yantif instead of the day before Yantif? Because a day before Yantif, I can't use it to buy clothes for my kids. Like, I just didn't have enough. And there's not enough time. Now, I can't plan my menus based on that money, and I can't plan their clothes based on that money. You know, so if you could just, like, I really appreciate it, but if you could just think
just
like 2 weeks
ahead.
Before, yeah. You know, so that I could plan to use it would be so nice. Like, so it's nice to have those words unspoken that can be thrown out there into the winds that different people can read these thoughts.
Which is sort of nice because that isn't the thing that you would actually
say
to somebody.
Right, you wouldn't. You wouldn't ever say, thanks for the gift, but could
by
I have
the way,
it
couldn't you have given
right.
it to me 2 weeks ago?
Right, because who would say that? But it would make such a difference. So it's so nice to have it. So that's what this is saying here. Make sure when there's Yantif, and it's expensive to make Yantif, make sure you give your gifts early enough that it will not only take care of them, but help them be happy on the Yantif. So that's what this is saying. Make sure you give those gifts on time. You're supposed to take care of the Levium. Now, what's the point of taking care of the Levium? At the root of the precept lies the reason that God, blessed is He, desires the good fortune of His Israelite people, whom He chose for Himself as a people, and He wished to make them meritorious, so to make them a treasured entity in this world, a wise and understanding people. Okay, so that's what He wants. How is He going to do that? So that all who see them, and this is also what He wants, all who will see them will recognize that they are the progeny blessed of the eternal Lord. So because that's the case, that's what He wants. So He brought them plans to bear from afar, to arrange ways where their occupation would be with wisdom. So He made them, because this is the desire, this is His goal, so He made it so that they need to learn Torah and be engaged in sound and pleasant customs and in priceless, effective ways of conduct, that they might learn the Lord from their early years. So they need that, and so they need people to teach them how to do that. So we have this partnership. That's what the Levium are about, is to make sure that we have a whole class of people that are invested in investing in the Jewish people, making sure that we're inspired at our seders, hopefully, making sure that we walk around differently, that when we pay our cleaning lady or when we pay a taxi driver, we have in mind, I'm doing a mitzvah d'oraisa. I'm paying somebody who's working for their daily wage. I'm paying them on the day they do their work. You know, and you just have that, you know, you have that extra inspiration inside you. And they see, look, a Jew is acting honest in an honest way. I just raked their yard. They're giving me $30. I love working for that house because they never say, oh, I don't have cash. Can you come back tomorrow? They made sure to have cash before they hired me because that's the kind of people they are. Right?
That's what you're supposed to do. By the end of the day.
That is what you're supposed to do, right, by the end of the day. And if you don't have it, find out where they live and bring it to them. Don't say, come back. They should come back on their bicycle or walk back to your house, right? You'll take it to them, right? So that being said, so that's how the Levium are supposed to help us, and that's why we're supposed to make sure we give them our gifts so that they can accomplish. Before you go, just open up Halacha 12 and 13. This whole parak of the Rambam is about Levium. But I just want to look, let's look at Halacha 13. Not only the tribe of Levi, but any one of the inhabitants of the world whose spirit generously motivates him and he understands with his wisdom or her wisdom to set set themselves aside and stand before God to serve him and minister to him and to know God, proceeding justly as God made him, removing from their neck the yoke of the many reckonings which people seek, he is sanctified as Holy of Holies, which means anybody can become an honorary Levi like this. Doesn't mean you get the money of the gifts, meaning you don't
you
get the tithes.
You can dedicate yourself to that.
You don't get the tithes. But if you want to be, if you're thinking, if you're looking at the teacher class and the holy class and saying, I want to be that, you can. You can say, I choose to arrange my life around holiness and Torah and learning. And in order to do that, I am going to have to give up some material stuff. You know, I'm not going to be able to pursue as much of an income or keep as pretty a yard or whatever it is because I'm going to do this. But that makes you kadosh kadoshim. When you say, this is the life I want, right, then God will be that person's portion and heritage forever and will provide what is sufficient for him in this world like he provides for the priests and the Levites.
This is like the kolel.
Yeah. And thus David declared, God is the lot of my portion. You are my cup. You support my lot. And he ends this. This is not the halacha, but he ends with a bracha. Blessed be the merciful one who provides assistance. But and so anybody can choose to be of that class, but we should all take care to help be God's emissary. We might want to also be of that class, but we should also make sure that we help support that class. Those people who are trying, or toiling in Torah and trying to create an educated and sterling Jewish people.
Well, that's the rabbis.
That's the rabbis.
Or teachers.
That's the rabbis, the teachers, the kollel members, you know, those people who dedicate themselves. So we should make sure that we give them, that we participate in giving them what's necessary to make it happen.
Teachers don't get their due very often.
Right.
Yes,
right.
As a teacher.
They don't. So, right. So it is important just to make sure that we, whether it's helping pay for the lights of the Jewish experience, you know, like that,
yeah,
there are places right. that need our support. And we all need to make sure that we are supporting and giving and
we
helping.
Have class next year.
And we have class next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. And we should all count and become elevated spiritually as we count.